Hello and welcome back to Conversations with Claire. Today, my guest is Roman Rodriguez. I need you guys to know that if you've been along on the journey, I kept asking people at the after stating their name how to pronounce their last name. And if you notice, I got that one right the first time. So small little round of applause for that. Okay, so Roman is the co-founder of The Coaching Market, which we'll talk a little bit more about later, but it is an e-learning platform for fitness professionals. He is also a PPSC educator, which stands for Pain-Free Performance Specialist Certifications, and he is an award-winning Equinox coach, which I'm actually really excited because the other things I maybe have a bit more context on, but that in particular, I've got questions for you about that because that's a big deal. It's a very big organization to win anything in. So let's go straight there. I want to know, welcome to the podcast. Thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
So let's go. Let's go back before we go to Equinox. Let's just go back and gain some context. You've said that you've lived a few different places. And so just kind of who are you as a human? How did you, like now you're in Austin, but that's new. So tell me a little bit about your upbringing.
Okay, so Roman Rodriguez, the early stages, I actually grew up overseas. My dad was in the Navy. In my earliest parts of my childhood, I remember being in Senegal, West Africa, at the end of that. Then a lot of my other early childhood after that, I remember being in Fiji. So I lived on an island for about 3-4 years. And then I moved back to the States when I was like 8 or 9 years old. And that's when I moved to the Sunshine State of Florida. I lived a little bit outside of Tampa, Florida, in a small town called Brandon, Florida. And yeah, you know, that was where most of my childhood was, in that, you know, the Tampa area, a little bit outside of the city. And then, yeah, when you make me look back and think about my background, I'm like, wow, I've really come a long way. So moving forward again, went to high school in the area, played high school sports, and I got a college scholarship to go to a small school in Tennessee called Carson Newman, right outside of Knoxville. And I took the chance. I moved away from my home and when I was 17 years old. Did that for about 4 or 5 years. And then moved from Knoxville, Tennessee to Northern Virginia. Took a leap of faith after I graduated college. And from there, you know, started my young professional career trying to get a job for Equinox. Didn't get my first one. And then ended up moving to Maryland a year later where I lived, you know, for like 10 years after the fact. And that was my professional career, going from 10 years in Bethesda, Maryland, and then a lot of great opportunities came my way, and I was able to jump ship after I got a job for a tech company and started my own, and now I'm in Austin, Texas. So I'm a nomad. I'm an explorer. I like living in different places, and I've never really lived in one area of my life before, as you can tell just from the fact that I've always moved.
West Africa?
Yeah.
Fiji?
Yeah.
All over the U.S.? I suppose you stuck to the east side of the U.S. and now you're in Central for the first time.
Now I'm in Central for the first time, correct.
Okay. Okay, so West Africa, you were there till what age?
I think 4 or 5. That was the end of my childhood. So I vividly remember Fiji. And that was from like 6 to 8 or 5 to 8. I don't remember the exact time range age-wise, but I remember that very vividly. I went to an international school. We had a house on like the hill. My parents are diplomats because military family, right? Uh-huh. And I remember vividly having a sugarcane field in my backyard, and there was a small river. It was actually pretty sick. Like, people won't understand that, like, a sugarcane field where you had a machete, get up early in the morning, go cut down your own sugarcane, put it in your tea. Wow. It was gnarly. That was cool. Like, and when I started talking about it, it made me think, I'm like, yo, that's pretty sick. I never really thought about it. I don't ever think back enough to actually, like, memorize, like, to really draw the memories of those moments. But I remember sitting back there, like, we had a Doberman, you know, it was a good dog. Lived in a small little, like, I guess town, village, whatever you want to call it. But yeah, I grew up on an island and then moved to Florida.
Have you been back to Fiji as an adult?
No, I have not. So I want to go back though. It should be pretty cool.
I went to Hawaii for the first time last year. And one of the things that we did while we were there was go to some sort of Polynesian islands thing where we got to go around this park and experience all of the different cultures of all of the different islands. And it was such a neat experience, and it definitely left you like craving, wanting to go and explore the other islands. So I know they'll probably just leave that there, but that just comes up for me as going to these, and they're all so different. And so it was just very very cool bits of exposure to these people from all of these different islands. And they were wonderful.
Totally. And you know, I hope more people get to see other cultures.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying live in other states and see other people, but like actually exploring other cultures, other countries, and actually just like getting a different perspective on life. Because if you do grow up in, if you grow up in America, if this is the only place you've ever lived, no matter where you live in the US, you are privileged compared to anywhere else in the entire world, because, mm-hmm. you know, every country has its good and its bads. But like, you know, if you do get the opportunity to see other places, the beauty it has, and, you know, the community, like it grows you as an individual and it gives you such a broader perspective of life.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'll just tell you, I spent 1 month in Bali, Indonesia in 2020. And that was a really beautiful exposure to their culture.
Right.
Loved it. We could talk more about that later, but that was a really cool, that was like the most at length that I've gotten to observe another culture. And it was beautiful. Right. I loved, they were very spiritual people. And so their daily practices and the peace that they seemed to just exist with, there was just so much that was so starkly contrasted to the way that we live here. And I really enjoyed just getting to observe it.
I mean, I respect those cultures' disciplines, especially, you know, people that keep up whatever their culture follows, whatever religion it is, it doesn't matter, right? Like just respecting the fact that a culture can last for so long and the people are so like ingrained in it and you can see the beauty behind different cultures. I just think it's awesome to see. And if you ever do get to see it and experience it, it does like leave a lasting impression on you.
Yeah. And it's different to be immersed by it. I really think I talk a lot about this on the podcast. So, and just in life in general, how having access to people through and cultural experiences and so on through the internet is beautiful. But there is something very, very uniquely different about actually being immersed in it versus just watching it. But I think that there's value in both. And what I say all the time about the whole internet thing is I'm like, I get exposed to like new ways of thinking. Like I get another opportunity than just what I grew up with. You know, when we were just in, for me, I grew up in the same place. I was in the same 45-minute radius for 30 years. And so it's just cool to get exposure in whatever format that you can to like, oh, just because this is what I was taught growing up doesn't mean that that's the way that it has to be. And I can consider other ideas. I think it's really cool.
No, it's super cool. I mean, even the small steps of like going from one state to another state, like I think 90% of people die within like 50 miles, like some crazy percentage of people die within like 50 miles of where they grew up. So it's like, if anybody can even leave the state you live in and go to a whole new city, like kudos. Like that's not an easy transition. It is hard. Anybody that is just a nomad, it doesn't care. Like you're not the same. Like most people are built to be within their tribe and their community. So if you can actually like explore, like even on a small scale, like live in a different state, live in a different city, like hang out with different people. You'd be surprised what you can learn from different groups of people and, you know, what you can take away, whether it's good or bad.
Well, and you've lived, okay, so now you've lived in a few places in the US. And so then collectively, you've been a nomad, right? What are some things now that you're like, as you're getting further along in your adulthood and so on, which by the way, how old are you?
33.
Yeah, so you're still plenty young, you've got some years under your belt, right? So what have you started to implement? Like now this recent move to Austin, you've probably behaved a bit differently than maybe you did on that first move when you were 17 or that 5 years later when you moved to Maryland, right?
Right, right, right.
So what are some things that you've picked up that have been helpful in like, how do you get yourself situated in a new place? Say that somebody is going to be moving and they want to, you know, they're expecting it to be hard because it is hard. What are some things that you were like, I'm going to do that first because I know that's going to help this be less hard?
One, you have to commit to the leap of faith, and people will talk themselves out of it. It's going to happen, right? You're going to find any type of ambivalence or resistance to actually making the change. Mm-hmm. Commit, right? And be open-minded about the commitment, because more people go into things with a closed mind, anxious, and just uncomfortable, which you will be. You're living in a new area. It's going to be different, but put yourself out there, right? Like the moment you get into a new place, like, hey, if you can, you know, start a new job, get on the new job, get yourself out there, stay busy. And then slowly but surely with patience, you'll be surprised who you can meet, because every time I've moved, I've had no friends. And then, you know, just over time, based on where I am, I meet people, then I meet more people. And then all of a sudden, you know, you become like locally known, which is awesome. But, mm-hmm. you know, it really is just taking the first steps of doing it. Right. And then, you know, making sure you know what your goals are when you move, because I think a lot of people just wander, which I have no problem with people that wander, but I've always been a very focus-driven person. So, mm-hmm. like, if I'm moving, I know what my goal is. Like, when I moved to college, when I moved to Tennessee from Florida, I'm focusing on football, right? When I moved from Tennessee to Northern Virginia, the DC metro area, I was focused on work. And I was like very, I'm one of those guys that, you know, once I'm focused and I'm going to do something, you can't, like, I have blinders. You're not going to stop me. And even if I try to meet people in the in-between and try to make more friends and explore and go out, like, I'm still very focused on what my goals are. So, you know, stay focused, know what you want to accomplish, and then just be open-minded to whatever experiences you could have.
Yeah. What did you move to Austin for?
So specifically, you know, I'm not a DC, you know, I stayed there for the DC metro area for almost 10 years, and I wasn't forced to stay there. So now that I had my company started, or at least on the early stages of it, and I wasn't connected to Equinox anymore because I had recently left, I had full control, and I wasn't, you know, anchored down by working for a specific company to stay in there. So when, you know, me and my wife were talking about it, we're like, you know, how about Austin, Texas? Because I remember when I was at the end, tail end of Equinox, I actually had a bunch of job offers to transfer to many clubs. One was San Diego Equinox, one was Austin, Texas Equinox, and another one is a club locally called the St. James Place. And they all, you know, approved me, and, you know, I was going to take the opportunity. I initially chose San Diego, but then COVID hit maybe a few months after, and it delayed the opening of a brand new club. And, you know, that frustrated me because then 2 years later, I'm still in Bethesda, Maryland, which, again, great place. I can't even complain about where I worked. It was amazing. But I was ready to transition. I wanted to try something different.
Yeah.
And that opportunity was gone. And then through, you know, other trials and tribulations, you know, working through the process of trying to stay focused and working and try to figure out what my next steps were. Once I started doing my tech company, everything just lined up where I was like, well, my lease is about to end. My wife's lease is about to end. Like, she's in tech. I'm in tech. Like, how about Austin?
And oh, she's in tech too.
We're both in tech. So yeah. Cool. Yeah. And, you know, we both work from home. So it was like, all right, let's do it. And she grew up in Maryland. She's Guyanese. She's like Indian, basically.
Yeah.
And she's
beautiful, by the way. I saw briefly. Oh, appreciate yeah, she's
it.
Beautiful.
She moved. Yeah, she has been in Maryland since she was like, what, eight or since she was like in elementary school, whatever, middle school. And she was ready for a move as well. So we were like, you know what? Austin, Texas is the center where all fitness, health, and wellness stuff happens. If any big events happen, it's going to be in either Austin or Dallas. Mm-hmm. And the fact that the tech community was so powerful here and for early stage startups, it was just perfect for me because I was in that same boat. And I love the DC metro area for some things, you know, don't like it for other things. But I left there because I felt the tech community wasn't as powerful for at least me, right? Other people would say, oh, well, DC tech is great. That's fine. Like, that's your perspective. And sure, it probably worked out great for you. But I didn't feel the connection there as much. And the more people I talked to in Austin, the more I read about it, it just made so much more sense. So once our lease ended, you know, you were like, you know what? Let's do the road trip. Let's start doing it. And we took the 22-hour road trip, got our house, and we were good.
That's such an exciting time. And I would imagine, like you said, there was a 2-year period. And I think that's what's so cool to note. You know, you can easily bop from thing to thing through the story and be like, oh, neat. And then here, oh, neat. And then here. And if you hear, it's 33 years, right? There's actually a lot of like time in between. And even just the looking at options for where to move, it's going to be San Diego, maybe it's Austin, whatever. And then there's this 2-year stint right there that you mentioned that probably in that 2 years came with some frustration, some confusion, some uncertainty, some whatever. I think it's just nice to note that like now you're here and this is so cool. And it probably was like confusing to make the decision.
Right. No, and it was, you know, it was a big decision. Like, and this is where, for me, I like moving. Like, I'm totally good at readjusting. I can meet people. It's what I do. But I knew for my wife, she was just like, initially, it was a little bit scary for her. And totally. I think a lot of it was reassuring. Like, hey, like, let's do it. Like, this is the adventure of life. Like, let's go on a pilgrimage somewhere. Let's go, you know, put roots in a new place and just start over, right? Because yeah. I think the nicest part about moving is that you can recreate parts of yourself, right? And I'm not saying you should completely change yourself every time, but you can, right? There's a new persona that you can put into a brand new community. And, you know, there's always opportunities if you're open-minded enough to take advantage of them.
God, those were good takeaways. Yeah. I don't know that you even meant to do that, but you just did that. No, that was good. Oh, cool. That was really good because you brought up the point of when you do get new opportunity when you show up somewhere new to, okay, this is now how I behave. This is who right. I am, you know, and that's actually quite powerful. You're not carrying around some of the same old stuff that maybe you carried before. That's just coming from me and my perspective, which, by the way, if she needs more community, I don't know if she does or not, but since y'all are newer, I'm more than happy to, like, she should come to On It. Like, we should hang out. Okay.
Please. No, that. Like, we're totally down to okay, go cool. out, be social. I need to get her out of the house more often because she works from home all day. I'm like, girl, let's get you out in the
yeah,
sun.
Dude,
like,
have come her from on. The On It. Yeah.
All right, we'll do.
And we perfect. Can do many of other things as well, but that's just like community there thriving. Okay. Perfect. So Thank you for that. So I do want to ask too. So you decide that you want to be a trainer, and you kind of touched on this, which we didn't even mention at the beginning of the episode, but how we met is because I took the PPSC cert again this past weekend for the second time because it was so valuable the first time I took it. I should note here that there is an episode with Justin Farnsworth, episode 30 something of the podcast, which if you want to go back and listen to that, I totally recommend that you do, because these two individuals could not be more different. And so that was what was so fun, was learning the same material from someone who is a doctor of physical therapy, very looking at things through a rehab lens, versus Roman, who's coming at it from this like long stint of being a trainer, coaching coaches, things like that. And now being in the tech world, like they were two very different perspectives on the same material. So that was way cool. But that's how Roman and I met. Just for context. So, okay. So you go to Equinox. I bet that was like exciting because that's a really reputable organization. Was it organization?
It is. I didn't know it was. I had no clue it was. So let me like, I did not plan on being a personal trainer. This is where you got to be open-minded to opportunities.
Yeah.
When I was in college, my senior year, my goal was to be, I was an athlete student. I did not focus on school. I was very unfocused in school, but my last few semesters, I tightened up. And I initially wanted to be a strength and conditioning coach. And I didn't go down that route because I didn't like the opportunities that were available. Like initially, if you go out of college as a strength and conditioning coach, you have to be an intern somewhere, a grad assistant. And, you know, I'm a guy from humble beginnings. I'm like, no, I got to get paid. Like I can't go, I can't afford to keep doing school. I'm not going to take out more loans. This isn't the right path for me. And my actual degree is in physical education because I thought I'd be a school teacher. I've done everything from pre-K, elementary school, middle school, high school, special education. I've done it all, right? Mm-hmm. So I thought I was going to be a school teacher too. Didn't go down that route. What ended up happening was one of my last few semesters, I was just kind of BSing on a class I was supposed to TA in, and on Craigslist, which I don't even know why I was on there, there was an application that was just like, Equinox, we pay the best. And it was sketchy. And I lived in Tennessee at the time. I had no clue what Equinox even was.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about the brand. And it just said, we paid the best. And I'm like, okay, cool. So then I remember just throwing in the application. I started getting calls from people. I'm like, oh, wow, like this is a real thing. And, you know, I'm doing the online interviewing. I passed everything. And the moment of truth came where I was like, oh, are you actually willing to move? So I was like, of course. So literally 2 days after I graduated on a Wednesday. That Friday, I packed everything in my car, sold my Xbox for gas money, had everything I needed just to kind of get there. And my mom gave me a little bit of a graduation gift for my first month's rent. And I took the risk. I just moved right up to Northern Virginia. I lived with my cousin for about a year. And I still wasn't a personal trainer yet. I went up there with no job, only with possibilities of a job. So for the first 3 months I lived there, I actually worked in a warehouse moving boxes. It was great. I love manual labor, and I was getting paid every week, and it was good. And, you know, I went through this process of trying to interview at multiple places. So I did not get my first Equinox job at Tyson's Corner in Northern Virginia. And I still applied at a few other places. But then, you know, about a few weeks later, I got my application sent to Bethesda, Maryland. So I was living in Virginia, and Maryland, the bridge, it's not that far apart. It's maybe like 15, 20 miles, right? It's right by the state border. And yeah, I interviewed there. With a different management group, and they loved me, I think at least. And then they hired me. So for the first maybe 3 months I was at Equinox, I was, you know, part-time personal trainer learning. I never planned on being a personal trainer. I thought I'd be, and some people would say, oh, well, is strength and conditioning coach and personal training the same thing? Not really, yeah. Right? There's certain aspects that are similar, but the focus and the way you go about it is a little different,
mm-hmm.
in my opinion. Some people disagree, but I just never planned on being a personal trainer, and I took the shot, and you know, it just worked out so much better than I could ever imagine. Like I did not, like someone that was brand new to personal training, very little experience, just went in there with a good attitude. It was gnarly going from nobody to somebody in such a short period of time in the company.
Tell me more about that. What is that? Like, who was somebody?
So my first 6 months, like everybody else, you hustle to build your business.
Mm-hmm.
I went from guy who had very little experience and occasionally got like kind of like I remember I'm powered by people that don't believe in me, so like that's just one of my
you use it as fuel.
I use it as fuel. And I remember being new to this and making mistakes and people laughing at me and then like making jokes, and I was like, all right, I'm gonna prove you wrong. So in 6 months I was able to, you know, 3 months in I left my first job at the moving factory. And then after the first 6 months, man, like, you know, I went through the same ups and downs every trainer goes through. You're trying to get your first few clients. You're trying to get on a roll. You get a few, you lose a bunch, and you're just like, yo, I'm back at square one again. And I remember it was January, 2014. And I was starting to kind of get my groove. I had like maybe 8 or something clients. I was doing like 90 something sessions a month, if that, right? And the corporate team comes down every year to every club to take a tour. Mm-hmm. And me being super brand new, this one of the executives came down. Her name was two of them, Sarah Rob O'Hagan and Scott Rosen. These got amazing people. They're around hanging out at the club. And I don't know them from Adam and Eve, but I'm trying to be seen. So I'm standing by the wall with one of my coworkers, and he asked, like, hey, man, who are you? Like, oh, how are you doing? Like, how's your productivity? What do you do this month? I was like, I'm going to do 160 sessions. I was lying. I had nothing but more than 70 scheduled. I was nowhere near it, but I just said it. And he was just like, he started to gasp me. He was like, oh, this is my kind of guy right here. And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it. And it was funny because my coworker knew I was lying. And she almost called me out in front of him. I was like, shut up. You know, I didn't want her to say anything. But once I said it, I don't know what happened within a short period of time, which me being on the floor and putting that kind of energy out, I went from like, you know, having like maybe 12 clients to almost like 25 or 30 within like a 2 month span after that. I went from doing 95 sessions to 145 sessions to 160 sessions. And then from there, within my first 6 months, I was pulling in like $8,000 to $9,000 per month at 23 years old. And it was crazy because I barely making $500 before that. I never had money like that. Like, this was a guy in school that after football practice, to have even just a little bit of money in my pocket, I would sign up to be an intramural ref. I was reffing dodgeball for like, you know, $50 a week, right? Just to put money in my pocket so mm-hmm. I could actually like have gas in my car and do stuff with my friends. And then in a short period of time, man, I was pulling in like just these crazy paychecks every month. And yo, it was crazy. And I went from a nobody getting laughed at to all of a sudden just being like at the top 5 of productivity within the gym I was working at. So more time goes on, right? The entire year goes by. After my first full year, you know, I clocked my first $100,000 in commission, which was great. Again, for someone that never made any money like that before.
Yeah.
And I got nominated that year for Trainer of the Year. I was the youngest of 5, newest person, first year employee. And I was now in a room with people that had been in the company for like 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
And it was crazy because I'm like, yo, I'm here. Like, how?
Right.
And it was just, you know, I'm trying to be humble, but after the event, I then realized, I'm like, oh, no, I actually can win this. Like, I actually could be the best of the best. Because I didn't win the first year, right? Top 5. Got a great vacation, you know, got to some recognition in the company. But, you know, I was like, you know what? I'm going to double down. Like, I was just figuring this out, but I actually can do this. I actually can be one of the best people in this company. So I wrote down all my goals, what I had to do, and I was like, all right, let's do it. So another year went by. And I went from being, you know, top 50 in the company from a revenue or productivity standpoint to top 15, doing crazy numbers, right? Pulling in great paychecks. And all this at 23, 24, 25 years old,
mm-hmm.
the youngest of the group, just killing it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I like I said, I focus. Like, when I'm focused, you can't stop me. There's nothing you really can do to slow me down. Then second year, nominated for Trainer of the Year again. I lost, frustratingly enough, but then I doubled down again. I'm like, you know what? No, I'm going to win this. And the third year, I finally did win a Trainer of the Year out of 3,000 employees, and the momentum started to keep going, where 2 years later, I won Educator of the Year. And then wow. after that same year, I led a team to Club of the Year out of 100 clubs.
I want to stop you because, of course, now the train has fully taken off, and like we are in this like race car now, which is so amazing. And like, I commend you because that's a huge, I can't even like, that's a big accomplishment. And I can only imagine my curiosity when you say all of that is there's a few things. Was it hard? Feels like a simple question because the answer is surely yes. Right.
Right.
From there, what are some takeaways? Like the hours in which you were working were probably extensive.
They were. My hours were gnarly initially. And I say extensive in a sense, like, I was, let's say the first year, right? If you ever worked at Equinox, they make you do floor shifts when you start, right? You get to meet people, you get to hang out. It's a good way to bring in some hourly pay. And typically, as you get busier, you can come off the floor shifts, and then you don't have to do as many. But it was counterintuitive in my mind, because everybody was so focused on trying to get off them. when I actually got busy, I stayed on them. Mm-hmm. I kept on asking to volunteer for more times because I was good on the floor. I was able to talk to people. I could sell them.
Right.
So my first full year, like, I was in there. I was up at 6 a.m. I was there till like 8 p.m., you know, on and off throughout the course of the day. I did the hard stuff. I didn't complain. I was hustling. And, you know, looking back and people say, you know, how did you get there? How do I do that? And, you know, people ask, but it's like, look, the path to success is actually very simple, but it's very hard to be consistent because you will get someone that's going to try and pull you left or right and deviate you from a very straight and narrow path. Mm-hmm. It's going to happen, right? Mm-hmm. That's where I mentioned, like, focus. Like, can you actually focus and kind of battle through the toughness and battle through, like, the trough of sorrow and frustration and actually get to the other side of it? Because that really is part of it. Like, if anybody asked me, what'd you do to win? I was focused. I wrote my goals down and I went towards them. Nothing was crazy. Mm-hmm. Right. But I was focused for longer periods of time with other people. And I always tell people, especially from a competition standpoint, you're going to probably stop before I will. You may be ahead of me a little bit longer, but you will stop before I do. And that's when I take advantage of people and I start to go past them. I'm like, all right, you're tired now. I'm going to keep going. I can go 30 more days. I can go 60 more days. I can keep pumping out these numbers. And I will make sure that there's such a far gap between us that when I do slow down, you still can't catch up.
Mm. I think that's really cool. The consistency, of course, is just a thread through anything that we accomplish in life. So whether it's professional endeavors or just showing up to the gym, you know, we of course, we'll get a little bit more into the weeds of that, but the ability to show up even twice a week or just anything, consistency in whatever you're trying to get done is like the move, right? And then obviously from there, taking action upon it. Those were the takeaways from that. So if you were to look back on that time, is there anything that you could clearly identify, I would have done this differently?
I wouldn't have listened to other people's opinions.
Oh, okay. I like that.
I respect mentorship, but if you're someone going for big goals and big aspirations, you don't ask average people. And I used to ask.
So you said I wouldn't have listened to other people's opinions. So you would listen to an opinion of someone who had achieved something that you desired achieving.
Correct. And that's where, fair enough on the clarity, right? Like, I wouldn't have taken so many people's opinions to heart, right? And the hard part is to find the people that you want to emulate. Successful people, I've learned this, that successful people will happily share the path to success with you if they know you're serious.
Absolutely.
Right? But this is where a lot of people talk about success and they'll share their opinions. And then, you know, the question is, do you internalize their opinions? Because a lot of people really won't give you great advice, especially if they're not trying to take the same path you are.
Yeah. And it often is not ill-intended. I mean, people want to help other people, but does this person have the capacity to help you?
Right.
Like, if I talk about this a lot with, like, I have many different mentors in life. Some of them know me personally and I can call them directly at any given time of day. And some of them have no idea who I am, but I'm very intentional with each vertical of life. Do you have what I want there? And if so, I will listen to you. And if you do not, I love you. But this is not where I'm getting my information.
Right.
You do not have proof of concept.
Right. No, you're 100% right. So going back, like, you know, like you said, a lot of people will offer advice to be nice.
Yeah, they care.
They care, right? But, you know, are you going to let that advice then drive you? Because this is one thing I've learned. I think this resonates with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. Most people don't have ideas. Ideas have people, right? Someone gives you an idea and then it also starts to kind of like take seed in your mind. And if someone starts to plant ideas of doubt, that will start to more or less grow over time. Mm-hmm. It might start small, but it will grow. Mm-hmm. So anybody that I told big goals to that were like, like, they make me feel like, oh, maybe I'm crazy. But then you meet that person that's like, no, dude, do it. And that's how I come off as a manager. When I manage people, when I hear people say big goals, I get fired up. I'm totally. Like, I will help you. Don't ask me for any money. Don't give me any credit. I want to see you win. And
yeah.
That's why I just love when I hear people saying that, because most people don't ever vocalize what they want to accomplish and vocalize big goals.
And how cool was it that there's what you said earlier in your you were in the room when these two executives or higher ups within the company that you didn't even really know, but you knew that they were somebody. And this one comes up and asks you something that you said, I was trying to be seen. So that was something noteworthy. Mm-hmm. Was you were aware that it was an appropriate time for you to do something to be seen,
right?
Even if it was subconscious, that was going on. And then from there, you said some outrageous number, and because at the time outrageous, right? But because you said it, now you had something to chase. You had said out loud some sort of a goal, and now it was like, I guess that's the direction we're going. It just speaks to the reality that our minds create matter, which is so exciting, because then I get to choose the narrative that I say. Mm-hmm. I remember, I'll just point this out because this is fun and this is in alignment. The very first time I had a conversation with my now boyfriend, and I asked him, we were training together, and I'm like, dude, what are your goals? I didn't know anything. I had no idea that he was an accomplished athlete. I really didn't know anything, right? And so I'm like, what are you trying to get done? You're doing a lot of stuff. What are you doing? And it was immediately, it was like one sentence. It was very direct and it was massive. And it was like, be a superhero to millions of kids, you know? And I was like, that feels really big and that feels really certain. How'd you get there? Like, what just happened, you know? And it's so cool because now I can observe his behavior over the course of months and be like, that goal seems to be driving him really hard in a direction that he really wants to go. And I think he'll get it done, which is so cool. If he didn't say it, I don't know to believe it for him.
Right.
Yeah.
And then you can judge off what the person's doing, how sure. What are their actions, right? And it sounds totally. Like he's focused. And that's the point. Like, you know, it's great to see people talk big and then follow up with action, because I will admit that I meet people that talk the biggest game, but it's like, your actions are weak, fam. Like, that will never, like, you can have all the biggest aspirations you want, but success doesn't come by luck, mm-hmm. right? And some people will say, well, there are lucky opportunities. Okay, the difference is that when that lucky opportunity does come, can you actually capitalize on it?
Yep.
Those are two different things, because there are many, many times every professional, there's a lucky interaction that if you were prepared for, you could have capitalized on it, but you weren't ready.
Yep.
So you may have missed your lucky break. Is it the fact that you're not lucky? No, I think you're probably just not prepared.
Yeah. And there may be a break later that you will be prepared for.
Right.
That's part of the journey to arrive wherever it is that you're going, which I guess I don't know that we ever really arrive, but that is so cool. How many times have you had exposure to opportunities that you were not yet totally ready for? There was more market research that you needed to do in your own life to discover, okay, actually I don't want to go there. So to just like not minimize that and let that be a part of the journey. And then whenever you are ready, like that opportunity, you will align and there you go.
Right.
Okay. So what did you like about working at Equinox? I promise we're almost done with the Equinox thing, because
no,
I actually
cool.
have very different things I want to talk to you about.
I have nothing bad to say about Equinox. Some people will say, oh, well, Equinox, this, that, and the third. Look, any company you work at, you're going to have good and bad experiences. The question is, how much did you grow,
yeah.
right? And I will also admit, some people will say, well, I had bad management. Okay, bad management happens, but the company itself I thought was great, because the culture itself was a culture of growth, and they pushed you, right? And I love that, like, and being in that environment with so many other motivated people that were trying to run a business. And, you know, when we did win Club of the Year, I think it was like 2018, 2017. I don't remember what year it was, but when we won it, it was cool to see a group of like 40 random individuals while working in the same building, like, hey, let's go get this together. And we did.
Mm.
And that was just so awesome. So the company itself, I, you know, eternally grateful for, because that company is the reason why I even got so many opportunities and grew into the person I was, because they gave me such a level foundation. They provided continuing education. And that was just, again, like, I can never say anything bad about the company, because they're the reason why I even got this far in the first place. And gave me a chance.
I love it. I think that's really, really cool. It just, you made the experience what it was. You decided, I'm going to show up in a space and contribute to the space for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And then you got to receive so much as a return.
Right.
That's cool. Okay. So we're going to move on from there. Is there anything else you want to say about that experience?
You know, I think one of the best experiences I got with being Equinox is being around the members. And if we're talking about stuff that maybe we regret after leaving, one thing I do regret was not leveraging the Equinox community and the members and the good people in there harder, right? Because I started to figure it out later, but, you know, I was around these clients that were just like high quality, high level people, right? These are like people that are executives, people doing big things. And looking back, I wish I would have tried to be more of a sponge about them, right? To learn, see what wisdom they could bestow upon me. And I did get that, actually. By the end of my Equinox career, I started to ask more of those questions. And it was so cool meeting people, like figuring out some of my clients were just like like, you're somebody. You may not be known in the internet world, but like, you are somebody, right? Yes. Where they just started to give me great advice and they were willing to help me once I told them, like, hey, I have aspirations. They're like, okay, I'll help you. And then they started to. And, you know, it's great. It was such a great experience to be around those people. So I wish I could have talked to them earlier. But at the same time, those same members were, when I told them my dreams and aspirations after Equinox, like, they did their best to uplift me. And, you know, this is where I think anybody who wants to do something of value and something that's going to be just dope, you know, don't hesitate to ask people, because successful people want to help. Like, there's this thought that, oh, they're not going to want to pull me up with them. That's not true. The most successful people I've met and have my clients, they find any way to help you. And it's just amazing. And I'm so grateful to the clients that I had that kind of shaped me into like a better young adult as well.
That's cool. That's really cool. And that's such a good piece of advice, because in this, what I'm thinking, especially since this is now a profession that I'm in, right? At this time, I'm coaching clients and loving it. And they come to you for your area of expertise. So it could be easy to go, well, you're here to hear from me. And yet there's so much value in hearing from them. I think certainly like with my own clients, I'm like, I'm obsessed with them. You can probably relate to that. Right. Like at the time where you're like, no, I literally love these people.
Right.
But they do, they have so much to offer in, because they're obsessed with things that are entirely different than what you're obsessed with. They're coming right to you for your obsession, but they have their own world.
And speaking of this, where I won't batter, go too long on this, is where it's just funny because you say that. Cause I remember one time I was in a team meeting. It was my managers, and they asked everybody in the group. I was like, they made a point saying that your clients are a reflection of you. And I remember sitting there, I was like, well, my clients are dope because I'm dope. And people looked around. They were like, did you just say that? I'm like, no, but like, my clients are dope. I think they're awesome. And I'm a dope dude. And they like hanging out with me. That's mm-hmm. why my clients are the best. And people were like, this guy's a little arrogant. But I was like, no, I'm honest. Mm-hmm. Like, I think my clients are amazing. Mm-hmm. Even the ones that give me a little bit of a hard time. I think they're all great people. And yeah, it's because I'm dope. And, you know, that was just like one of those funny things where like, you attract the people that you need or that can help you grow into a better person.
Totally. Totally. And I think that's what's so cool about being a coach is that each one of your clients is teaching you. Like, one of the most powerful shifts, I've had a handful of powerful shifts over the past few years. And one of them is certainly like being given the opportunity to look at life through a different lens. So maybe this is a client, maybe this is a friendship, something, anything, a relationship with another human, is understanding that everyone, every experience shows up in your life as an opportunity to be a teacher if you let it. So whether it was a good moment or a bad one or whatever, whatever the experience was that you had with that individual or you're having with that individual, if you choose, like, you get to let it be constructive. That's up to you, but that's pretty empowering.
It is.
And then, yeah, I love it because like they have other things that they're fascinated with in life, good at in life. And so it's like, let me learn about this from you, because realistically that's not somewhere that I've dumped tons of my energy into. So anything that I can glean from you, like, educate me on something that's outside of the realm of something that I'm, you know, obsessed with.
Right.
It's fun.
Oh my gosh. One of my best clients ever, name was Laura Stewart. I loved her with all my heart.
We love you, Laura.
I
said, we love you, Laura.
We love you, Laura. But, she gave me such an eye for real estate because she was a real estate agent. And I remember one time she just took me with her. She's like, well, come. I'm like, heck yeah, let me go see these houses in McLean, Virginia. So she was taking me looking at houses. I was like, oh my gosh. And I then gained an appreciation for houses. I'm like, I love a house, you know? Mm-hmm. So it's like small things you never know you get to experience unless you like actually connect with your clients and then you're open to whatever they have to offer. And just, again, just take a chance, go hang out with them. You never know what they're going to share with you.
Totally. Totally. Those are really good bits for someone in this field or someone curious about being in this field. I know I work with a lot of clients. I think their long-term aspirations are to actually be in this role, mm-hmm. which is so freaking cool. Mm-hmm. And so those are good bits for anyone like that. Okay. So let's go to the PPSC. I want to go to just some takeaways from the experience that we had this past weekend that I got from you and then have you unpack them a bit further.
Okay.
And so I want to start with what you opened with, which was a comment about pain. And I think I'm just going to lob you that ball and let you run with it for a minute and mm-hmm. not say anything. So what is your disposition about pain?
Okay, so specifically, I'm going to talk musculoskeletal pain, right? And if we dive deep into that, I'm referring to non-contact pain, right? Pain that typically happens when you're just doing nothing. You sit down for a long period of time and all of a sudden you get up, your knee hurts, your hip hurts, and whatever musculoskeletal pain happens, right? What I try to get coaches to understand early on is that you need to explain to your clients, this is not the end of the world. Pain is going to happen, right? And I try to give simple analogies and stories, right? And I think the analogy I remember using in class was, even the best NASCARs, the finest tuned cars that go racing, that are just high performance cars, they still have to go to the mechanic too. So you have to make sure your clients understand, hey, as you continue down this fitness journey, you will run into aches and pains. You will have some joint issues, right? The biggest thing to understand is that it's okay. We can figure this out. And that goes back to the coach then, you know, communicating in a way that creates some comfort with the client.
Trust.
But you just need to be mindful and understand that, yes, like, pain is going to be something that will slow down people's efforts and make them more cautious, which is understandable. But as a coach, as someone working in the industry, you need to be able to talk to your clients and say, hey, I can sympathize what you're going through. Let me work with you to figure out how we can correct this pain and dysfunction. Because musculoskeletal pain that's not caused by any outside external things typically builds up due to some poor quality movement somewhere, mm-hmm. whether it's a lack of mobility, a lack of stability, I don't know, right? But this is where the coaches in the problem-solving game of coaching, you need to figure this out. But you need to be able to effectively communicate that with your clients. Like, hey, I sympathize. You are in pain. Me as your coach, let's work to figure out how we can manage this as much as possible and then help you move better in whatever way, shape, or form we need to as a coach.
Mm-hmm. I love that. I thought that was so good. It was just, you know, to the effect of, if you're a human in motion, inevitably at some point you're going to feel some pain.
Of course. Like, how many, like, so we've experienced this as coaches. How many clients come into the gym for the, like, early, they're new to the gym experience. They come in and they are intimidated and they assume, oh, I have aches and pains. That person over there doing pull-ups, they're in great shape. I bet you they feel great. No. I'm pretty sure he has shoulder pain. He probably has, that person probably has ankle pain, right? Look at that KT tape. Oh, he's struggling. Look at that low back. Like, it happens, right? Like, it's going to happen. The biggest thing we got to be mindful is, how do we effectively manage it? And one thing I just want people to focus on is, like, you got to figure out what your clients can't do very well from a movement perspective. And if you can typically correct that on, like, the micro level, you'll create this chain of events where it's like, hey, like, you're now moving down the road of moving better, which you should feel better. Will you have aches and pains? Of course, right? You're a human. You're pushing your body. You're gonna have aches and pains. We just gotta make sure we manage it the best we can.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that, because that's just so it's relatable. And once you come to, like, get some reps under your belt and understand that you can trust your body and be able to differentiate those, when is this pain, you know, something that's just normal and acceptable. But someone who's newer, has been out for a while and is back or anything like that, like, it's genuinely scary. And your brain will tell you all sorts of funky things about what's going on that may not actually be going on. And one of the things that you did say that I loved was, you just said that pain is relative. And I enjoyed that frameworks for thinking about it, as well as the whole don't chase pain. We have to take a look at, like, sure, maybe you feel it over here, but is it because of something completely, you know, something that's way over here? I really like that. So I do want to just kind of hop straight to my biggest takeaway from a coaching perspective. And then I've got some other fun stuff, don't worry. But the biggest takeaway for me personally, that when I was thinking about what am I going to implement moving forward with my own clients based on the information that I've received from you, it was about T-spine mobility. So that's thoracic spine, that's the upper back. I work with my clients on that all the time anyway, and I'm aware of the fact that it is a very useful thing to have access to. I'm aware of the fact that we can get really locked up in there and it can be quite problematic, but you really dove deeper on, like, it can inhibit the way you squat, you know, things that I was like, oh my gosh, so maybe all these hip mobility drills are good too. And yet maybe I need to, like, really take a look at that upper back while I'm focused on this hip, you know? And that was big for me. And so do you want to have anything else to say about your T-spine mobility?
Yeah. So, I mean, outside of that, like, I personally, like, I was a part of the movement initially where it's like, oh, you have to stretch your quads out because your quads are tight. And I get that. I get having hip mobility, but from practical experience with general population clients, like,
we're talking, you've worked with
I worked with a lot of people. So yeah, like probably over a 10-year period, I've easily done over like 20,000 training sessions. I've done a lot of training sessions in a short period of time.
Right. And you've coached a lot of coaches who come to you with my client's experiencing this. Can you help me?
Exactly. So this is what I've noticed. If someone's T-spine is completely wrecked, not even completely wrecked, just off, it's going to throw off the way your hip is lined up, the way your shoulders work, and the way your trunk and midsection works. So me personally, right, some people may disagree, but I've noticed that if I can start to go early on and correct the T-spine, if my assessments show there's a problem there, like if I assess and like, okay, like you definitely are a little kyphotic, you have a little rounding, like you have this little Igor looking look, like let's fix that first, right?
You guys could see his demos. I'm so sorry that the audio or the video is not yet present. We are actively working on that because he does a beautiful representation, whatever, example of a kyphotic. It's awful, guys. It's so bad. Watching him do it is really, I'm so sorry you're not experiencing that. Keep going.
And yeah, and I really harp on that too, because not just out of the fact that like if your T-spine gets locked up, it's going to throw off the position of your pelvis as well. I'm more concerned about the nerves, right? Because all your major nerves run down your run down your spine, whether it's through cervical to lumbar, whatever. And as you get more and more kyphotic and start to lose range of motion in other areas, there's a higher likelihood you could probably start pinching nerves. And when you get pinched nerves, then you start to get referral pain. And this is where people that herniate a lumbar, they herniate a disc in their back, like their L4, L5, they typically feel pain in their feet or the numbness in their feet, calves, hamstrings. Some people a little higher might feel in their hip flexors and just all through the T-spine. If you ever look at a chart, it's called a dermatome chart. Mm-hmm. It will show you exactly where, from an origin perspective of the nerve and where that nerve will like light up certain parts of your body. And having super kyphotic posture will put you in poor positions and then have some type of nerve pain. Then the nerve pain radiates somewhere else. And then your assumption is that, oh my gosh, this is my problem. So an example, my mom's a hairdresser. My mom has been hairdressing my entire life. And I remember when I was a kid, she actually had to get surgery for carpal tunnel syndrome. And she's always in that reaching forward position. So, you know, whatever, she had weak hands, she cut the nerve. Never really fixed the problem. They just snipped the nerve. As I started to train more, I could see, I'm like, okay, like my mom is just super kyphotic and needs to stretch out a little bit. Once she did it, she instantly got like, it's like, it was almost like instantaneous within like a week. She started to get more strength back in her hand. Like she could actually use her hand again. She could reach around. It was just from trying to realign her T-spine, trying to get her more motion, make their spine a little more supple. Made a world's difference, right? So that's just my opinion, right? Like this T-spine to me is very important because most of the nerves run that area. Are the other parts of your body important too? Yes, of course. Like, yes, your pelvis should be good. Like, yes, you have good ankle mobility. But if we're talking about general population clients, like, what is the first and foremost thing I look for? T-spine. Like, let me make sure your posture looks good enough, right? That we can at least, like, minimize any other type of compensations anywhere else.
Mm-hmm. I think that's so good because, of course, as we know, back pain is just this awful chronic thing that's all over the place in our, well, in the world, but certainly in our country, of just people are just existing with all of this chronic back pain. Mm-hmm. And so to just think about what can we be doing to help them? And so with the idea of, okay, wow, maybe my kyphotic posture, maybe my T-spine being immobile is inhibiting my quality of life, which I think that's the big thing. This is a quality of life thing. You know, this is like, do you feel okay in your body? Do you actually feel good in your body? Hopefully. But I mean, do you even feel okay in it? And so if somebody wants to work on their T-spine mobility, what are a couple of things that you would tell them to focus on straight out of the gate?
Okay, let's assume that they've done an assessment, right? They got assessed by themselves or somebody else, like, hey, like this looks a little tight, right? Part of it is the exploratory process to figure out, hey, is this coming from, you know, maybe we got to loosen up stuff around your lats or your pecs first. Like, I don't know, right? This is where we got to figure out what might make the most sense. But if we're talking about anybody just new to it, like, if you can tell that you feel a little stiff in your upper back, yo, it might be as simple as getting a foam roller, rolling over, trying to push yourself in the T-spine extension, hanging from stuff, stretching your lats out, stretching out your chest. Just doing that, I'm telling you, releases so much pressure on people because they just feel better. They start to like minimize their neck pain. They start to have a better posture. And I don't know if what other trainers don't feel this way. When I can see my clients having better posture, I get so geeked. I'm like, all right, fam, like you got shoulders?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Like,
and we can use those now.
Right.
Like they move now.
You can press over your head. You can reach behind your back and squat. Like, this is dope. But, you know, yeah, if any coach or anybody in general trying to figure out what they need to do, like, you know, start off with some type of rolling or even a massage, like get someone to just loosen up your upper back, start trying to actively stretch a little more, right? Set up a routine where if you spent a long time at a desk, like what can you do that's very simple to help mobilize yourself? It might be, you know, getting on the ground, trying to stretch out your abdomen because the anterior muscles will affect, you know, your positions as well. So maybe stretching out your abdomen, stretching out your pecs, you know, just doing some light bits of movement after being like, you know, sitting for such a long period of time or whatever you're doing just goes a long way for just general simple maintenance. Mm-hmm. Now, if you do that a little bit every other day or every few days or before you work out, like you will feel significantly better in my opinion.
Gosh, it's so true. And that whole like abdomen thing takes me to the next bit, which is the antagonist muscle group, right? And there's something else that you said that was great, but I love this and I'm just going to use my practicals of my current, you know, there's a couple of clients. There's one in particular that just comes to my mind of we're just over 1 month in and came in with a lot of weight to lose mm-hmm. and just, you know, not much mobility to work with whatsoever. And only five, you know, we're on week five now and things like he literally is now getting up off of the ground on one leg. That's literally that's crazy progress in 4 weeks. The point of me telling this story, also the fact that I have him doing all sorts of things for his upper back and trying to get those scaps to move, like we're on a journey with it. And like I saw movement on Tuesday. Like I saw something. I was like, oh my God. Oh my God. Oh my God. It's working, you know? Nice. And it's cool because that's, if you zoom out, people are so like, as soon as I decide I want to go on a wellness journey, I want all the results right now. And as soon as I don't see them within 2 weeks, I probably just did it wrong and should give up and whatever, you know? And it's like, did you take 30 years to get there? Oh my. And then like to know that we can in 4 weeks, we can make that kind of headway is like insane. Give me 4 months. Give me 4 years. You know,
such a good
we aren't going to need 4 years, but we'll be like really fit, you know? It's so cool. It's so empowering and it matters.
Oh, like the small things matter so much for clients. And you know what the hardest part about trainers tend to do? They don't affirm it. I am that trainer. I will gas you up for the smallest yeah, thing. Gas you up. I don't know what any client I've worked with, if the moment I see them put on new outfits, because from a psychological perspective, right? If you get someone who's new to the gym, they wear baggier clothes typically because they are like, there's this self-consciousness.
Totally.
The moment they come off in a cutoff tee or some tights, most of my clients are ladies, or some tights, like they got a new outfit. I'm like, yeah, you're feeling it. Like, oh my gosh. Tell. Like, what happens? Like, oh, I just feel good. And I got a new outfit. I'm like, all right, it's awesome. And I love that because that's you can see they feel better about themselves. And you know that I feel like that's one of the most rewarding things of training, just seeing people more confident about themselves to the point where they do more riskier things, like I'm going to show more shoulders, like all right, I'm going to wear these Lulu tights, like all right, cool, like
yes,
that's awesome. I love that about our industry.
Yes, it's so cool. It's oh my gosh, I love it. Okay, so we're gonna keep moving because of course this is, as I knew would happen, I'm like, it's, we're easily gonna eat up the time. So I did want to talk to you because I'm getting more and more into combat sports personally. Mm-hmm. And you made, and also just have made a lot of friends in that world because being in Austin is a mecca of right. jiu-jitsu right. and MMA in general, but like they're here. I love it. Anyway, you made a comment about things like on different fighters, their serratus and so on being really like they hold these positions, right? And you talked about being able to get out of the positions and the benefits that they will experience from that. So I have another thought, but before I go there, I just kind of want you to like open up on that.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, if you just look at any like fighter, boxer, combat sport, like they're going to have overdeveloped serratus anterior and pecs, like pec minors and serratus anteriors. That's totally common, right? Like that's going
to
happen.
And so so let's get specific to anybody who doesn't understand this terminology. So you are speaking about their upper side front.
Anybody listening, if you're trying to figure out where your serratus anterior is and your pec minor, it's basically if you put your hand on the side of your rib a little bit underneath your chest.
Yep.
Right? Not too low from the armpit, but it's like kind of the front side of your ribs. And you can feel like, you know, if you get near the armpit area, you can feel some muscle right there. And those are postural muscles. They do pull you forward when they are overdeveloped and get locked in a short position.
All right, keep going.
Yeah. And, you know, it is. Some people will say, like, oh, this is not the greatest posture. Like, look, these are fighters. Like, that they're going to be in that position. Now, the biggest thing is that you just got to make sure you train them to actually be able to get out of those positions, right? Being able to make sure they can do thoracic rotation, some type of retraction, like their shoulder blades rolling back, making sure their pecs stay loose. And, yeah, like, just make sure you train them so they can get out of that position when necessary. Mm-hmm. But it is what it is with them in those positions, but this is where, as a good coach, if that is one of your clients or if that's yourself, you just got to do your best to manage it to minimize any future injuries, in my opinion.
I appreciate that a lot. I think it's just really good food for thought, because we do want to be healthy for the course of lifetime. And I love that you're able to just say, yeah, you need to exist in that position because that's something that you need for your sport. But can you get out of that position?
Right.
It's such a, and the beautiful thing is, if you work on it, the answer is probably yes. Right. I also think about, from thinking about the jiu-jitsu world, like a joint durability standpoint, right? And you talk about stability a lot in the PPSC, which was from the first time, and then of course just reaffirming this time, is a huge transition in focus in my own training and certainly what my clients experience. We talk about the mobility, stability, strength trajectory, and how I want to be able to access the range of motion, then I need to be able to be stable in the range of motion, then I need to be able to get strong in it, and how I need to go along that journey, right? What a cool journey to be on. And I love thinking about, for these different athletes that are realistically going to be stretched to these like very uncomfortable end ranges, and just how doing these different isometric holds in all these different positions, doing tempo work, making sure that they're really training the eccentric portion of the lift and the long part of the, like how important slowing all of that stuff down is for a stability stance. And because at the end of the day, I mean, anybody is going to want that, right? Like whoever we are, like that's something we should all desire, being more stable in all positions. But like specifically for these athletes, that's quite advantageous. If I'm not as uncomfortable there, if I'm stronger there, if I'm more stable there, I'm more durable. And we all want to be more durable.
Right. Right. And at the end of the day, when it comes to these individuals that are training for a given activity, they are going to get broken down by it. Your goal as the coach or the athlete that's maybe partaking is that you need to prep your body early enough, the fact that when you do have to go through this process, it's going to beat you up a little bit. Your body can be resilient during that process.
Right.
Right. Like whenever I used to work with young athletes, you'd always get this joke and they say, well, how is lifting weight helping me be better at football? It's like, it's not. I'm making your body better so you're a stronger human, so that you're more durable in your sport. You will still have to train your sport to get better at it. Doing back squats will not make you better at jiu-jitsu. Doing back squats will make you strong, so that when you have to throw a bitch, you can throw them pretty good, right? That's the right. Like, isn't that the point? Like,
totally.
You can eat their little ass and just throw them on the ground. Like, that's really the point. That's why, yeah, that's where I think training is so important. Like, that's why you need to get stronger and more durable, because the more durable you are and stronger, stable, whatever, mobile, like you can do some pretty cool stuff.
Totally. Yeah, that's funny. I think we'll leave that there for now, but I've got funny stories about just, yes, training that, and then being like, oh God, if she decides to get any good at these skills, we have a problem because she's so strong.
Oh, it's been so fun. Funny.
But right now we're nobody, I'm not trying to compete in that, but it has been quite fun. And then I feel like a bull in a china shop, just kind of like banging around, but it's fun. Being strong is fun.
So good. Such a powerful feeling.
Yes. And then you've also done a lot of Olympic weightlifting, which we haven't even touched on. Okay, I do want to move on and make sure that we touch on this, because this was something else that you said that I really enjoyed you talking about. It is absolutely a controversial topic, and I think that the point that you made was really good and worth talking about, which was the whole difference between men and women and in sport. And before... What comes up for me is, at least here recently, a lot of the argument, because as we know, like we've got this whole, can you compete regardless of your like gender identity, all that good stuff, right? So a lot of it gets talked about with like hormones, right? Testosterone, all of that good stuff. And that's a lot of the conversation. But one of the things that you brought up was talking about bony structures and things like that, and the differences from a anatomical male to a female. And so I kind of want you to go off on that for just a minute.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting how it's a controversial like statement to talk about the differences between male and female bodies. Now, when it comes to sports, I always try to specify, yes, skills are not the same. Understand that someone's skill sets are not the same as their physical attributes, right? So some people will say the comparison, like if anybody heard the saying of like, oh, I forget which one of the Williams sisters it was in tennis, Venus or Serena, she's the best tennis player of all time. Some people will say she's the best woman. It's like, oh no, she's probably the best between men and women. Some people will say she has the best skilled, which might be a point, but like there is a very clear difference in the body types of some of the most elite tennis players, for how long their arms are, how broad their shoulders are, how tall their bodies are, how long they are, and the difference in muscle mass between both sexes. Like it you can't control that, right? You will on average have more men that are going to be bigger, faster, and stronger in the top 1% than the top 1% of women. It's not taking away their skill sets. It's not taking away any of their achievements. But if you're talking about them going 1v1, one-on-ones with each other, you're going to typically see that the larger, stronger, faster individual will beat you regardless of how good their skills are,
mm-hmm.
right? And, you know, it's let's admit, right, if you're in the adolescence stage, kids look the same. They do. Right. And typically girls start to go through puberty a little earlier. So girls are a little taller initially. But once boys go through like their second or third round of puberty, there's a very clear difference in how wide their shoulders are, how long their limbs are, how much muscle mass they can put on a short period of time. Let's not even talk about like the fact that women have they PMS. Right. They go through the cycles where guys' hormones are pretty consistent. Right. So that all plays a big differentiator in how fast you can put on muscle, how much you can recover, how much type 2B muscle fibers you have, mm-hmm. right? And, you know, overall, just how much bigger you can get over the long term. Does that say women aren't as skillful? No, that's definitely not the case. There probably are women that are just as, if not more skilled from men. But if you're talking about them...
Well, there are certain things that they're actually, like, skill-wise, typically more prone to excel at in different... So, but, like, often those are not the sexy sports that you want to watch.
Correct. Like, yeah. Again, I use this example in class, and I think people get it. Like, it's almost not surprising to see somebody who's sick, a man who's 5'11 or 6 foot dunk on a 10-foot rim. But you rarely see a woman who's 6'8 grab rim. Like, and you will have some people that are exceptions. That's fair. Sure. We're talking about the masses, right? It's just the difference. Okay, so even let's use me as an example as a weightlifter. I was a national level weightlifter. I never ranked really high, but I made it, right? Top 10% of athletes making it to nationals. My numbers at my weight would allow me to beat the best woman in the world. Right. And I'm not that good compared to men. I'm good compared to most people. But if you talk about the national level, my best snatch 130, my best clean and jerk or 130 kilos, so like kilos, 285.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then my best clean and jerk is 100 in competition, 152 kilos and then training 160 kilos. Right. So I've had some big totals.
Mm-hmm.
Those totals, if I was switched genders and I was a woman, like, and competed in the women's category, I'd be top ranking in probably the world, right? I'd be better than most women in our country. And it's not saying they aren't better lifters than me. They probably are better lifters than me, but you just got to be fair and say that, yes, I'm a guy and I will naturally be a little bit stronger. The average guy's grip strength is 17 times stronger than the average woman's. It's because of their frame, how wide their shoulders are. Are there women with wide shoulders? Yes. On average, you will see a lot more men with wide shoulders and big frames than you will see women, right? And that's, you know, it's crazy. It's controversial. But I typically hear it's controversial from people that never even play sports.
Yeah. Well, and that's, I think, right. Right.
Right.
Just curious, because I agree with you. I don't know. I'm confused about how this is even a thing. And yet, if it's going to be a thing. Anyway, I loved the points like you just made, that 17%, anything like that. Like, these are just... You hear a lot of talk about the hormone side of things, which is highly relevant. And it was interesting to then go, let's talk about the bony structure. Let's talk about the anatomy and how that's going to play into this thing, aside from what's going on a hormone level. It all matters.
It all matters, right? And again, this, you know, some people try to always use the comparisons of the most extreme of the females and compare them to the average man. It's like, well, duh, she's good. Venus will destroy me at tennis because I'm not any good.
Yeah.
Right? But yeah. Like, of course, like, I don't play tennis, but that's not a good comparison. If we're talking top 1% versus top 1%, there is a huge difference across the board from any physical sport. There's a very, very big difference.
Yeah. And, see, now I'm like thinking, I wonder what the women's powerlifting, you know, versus men's powerlifting and so on. I mean,
of course, like I've yet to, I mean, unless I'm wrong, I don't know. I've seen women online, like very strong women squatting 600 pounds. But with that being said, the best men squat like 1,000 pounds.
Right. So it's there's a stark contrast.
And they're typically a little smaller too. Like, I'm not trying to say anything about weight, but like some of the biggest women that squat heavy, guys that are smaller than them weight wise lift more than them.
Right. Right. How are you going to argue with that? That's pretty challenging to argue with. Yeah. Yeah. And then, I mean, I think even in CrossFit, which would be my background of like entry point into the gym and so on, you know, programming there is typically roughly 30% reduced for a female versus, you know, that's kind of how we come up with these like males and females numbers. Right. It's somewhere right around there, whether it's calories pulled on a machine or load on the barbell, you know, it's just not the same.
Right. And that's even from a, like, let's say like you're teaching classes from that perspective. Yeah, it's about 30%. But like when you really do get into like the top 1% of CrossFitters and you look at the CrossFit games, the weights are pretty far apart. Right. Relative. And some people, oh, not that far. But no, they're not close.
Right.
Right. I'm not saying they're not like, I'm not saying these women aren't strong.
And they're insanely impressive, period.
Crazy. Crazy. Oh my gosh. Yes. Right.
Like, it's crazy where it's gone.
Oh my. Some of my favorite lifters are women. Right. Like, yeah. I forgot.
Maddie Rogers.
Right. Like, Maddie Rogers. Who doesn't love watching her? Like, total fangirl. I fangirl her all the time, but it's like, okay, but like, I know she's not going to take on like, oh man, like who would be equivalent? Wait, CJ Cummings.
Well, I'll tell you, my chiropractor is the current national champion in Olympic weightlifting in his lane. Well, you're new enough here.
Yeah.
Then maybe you don't know him, but Lane Palm. Is in his weight class. He just won nationals last year.
Oh, that's sick.
Yeah, and he's still competing. So we'll see. So he's the current national champion. So his numbers, for example, like, yeah.
That's a cool, humble brag. Like, I know this national champion. Yeah. Like,
he's my chiro. He works it on it. He's great. His wife is about to have a baby. They're amazing. Gosh,
I can imagine how strong he is. If you, like, you must work on you really good. Just
and we used to train together. She and I did. We occasionally still get to. She's about to pop out a baby. But she's a CrossFitter. She's been to the semifinals a number of years. And anyway, she and I have competed on a team a couple of times in CrossFit. And so, because I just still dabble for fun. Let me be clear, just for fun. But anyway, anytime that we do any weightlifting, yeah, their baby's going to be strong. Because she doesn't even train that discipline specifically. And like, she was pregnant doing a competition with me, doing a complex with cleans. Like, I don't remember, but it was a clean complex of some sort with like 200 pounds plus. Right. Like, she was. LOL. Anyway. Yeah. And then he's national. They're going to have a strong baby.
Yeah. Super strong. Yeah. I love that. Yeah. I love strong couples.
Oh, I love them. Yeah. They inspire me. Okay. I think that pretty much, is there anything else from like PPSC type stuff that you do just for, like, that you want to touch on? Cause we covered the main things I wanted to talk about that were standouts for me.
I mean, when it comes to PPSC, if you want to know what I'm noticing, is that I love how so many curious people are now dabbling in the fitness space. And I mean non-professionals either. Like, I typically have one or two professionals around the country every time I do a course somewhere that are non-professionals and they just want to learn. And I love seeing non-professionals become active learners in our space. I think that's so powerful because then I think our space, the fitness, health, and wellness industry, we get overlooked for how powerful education is and how much people want to learn stuff. And, you know, I have had clients where I'm precision nutrition certified and taught some of their courses through Equinox for a while. I had clients sign up that had full-time jobs. Like, hey, I'm going to do the online precision nutrition course. And they wanted to learn. And then I've had people, again, across multiple different, like, parts of professional backgrounds and different parts of the country that are just like, hey, I just want to do this. I think this is awesome. I want to learn more. So I love seeing, just through PPSC and that experience, how many people that just want to learn more and they're like, they have this urge to learn any type of education, which if you're a non-professional coming into our space learning, I think that's just so amazing. I always applaud them.
As the person teaching that's profound. So to take the PPSC, you don't need to be a coach. You can just choose to take it.
No, you don't have to take it. Yeah. Most certifications, you don't have to be a coach. You could, like, unless you want the CEUs. Like, if you want to just go learn, fam, go learn. You don't need the CEUs. Go get the experience.
Thank you so much for clarifying that. That's incredibly important for anybody to know, because I think a lot of people operate under the assumption that I need to be a coach in order to. And I love that you said that, because I actually posted about it after our PPSC and just talked about the fact that for literal years, I was attending different certifications for coaches purely because I wanted the education. So I spent years working in a different profession, zero desire to be a trainer, to be a coach, anything, had no desire, but I did want the education. I wanted to learn how to move better, feel better, eat better, you name it. So I was going and doing all of these things. And I remember feeling out of place. I felt like all of the other people in this room are practicing coaches and I'm not, and they're going to know that I don't belong here. And it was scary, but I desired it enough that I was willing to do it anyway. And then it's so cool because all of these years later, like I shared with you before we started to record, my first exposures to actual coaching were due to the fact that I was in a setting where I was doing a specific job and there just so happened to be fitness as a part of the thing. And the founder of that company was like, you're the most qualified coach here. We really need you to coach. And I'm like, wait, but I don't do that, you know? And so, and now here we are. But I love that because I agree with you that I think that it is so cool. Anybody who wants to get curious, whether you ever plan to use it in a professional setting or not, just use it for yourself. Use it for the people that you love. Like if you're curious about it, you get the opportunity to learn about it. And then a small plug that on PPSC, if you use my name, Claire, as a code, I'll put that in the description, but it literally will save you money. So there is that, which I'm very grateful for that. So just like, if you're curious, go take the PPSC. I think it's a phenomenal, I think it's as far as different certs that I have taken and have implemented in my own practice for myself to feel good in my training and certainly use with my clients like crazy, PPSC was probably the standout. And it was the standout that I used today to inform how I go about training people. That says something because I've taken a lot.
Yeah, I've taken so many educational courses too. And I will admit the one thing that PPSC does better than most certifications, even before they recruited me, they found a really solid way to make stuff that can get very technical as relatively simple as possible without having like a complete information overload, mm-hmm. right? Because that's where I think a lot of people lose on certifications. I've taken a lot of certs and I can give happy plugs to a lot of certs that I've taken. I will say that when I first took it, this one did the best job of just kind of like laying it all out and saying, here's how you can have this system that's pretty straightforward. This is no circus trick. And it's literally called the PPSC Foundations because most professional coaches have awful foundational skills. And I'm telling you, from that's mentored hundreds of coaches, smart as just the smartest people you ever meet, their foundational skills were terrible, right? So whether you're a new professional, experienced professional, or someone just new to the industry, regardless of your learning experience, I think it's more than helpful for a lot of people to just give you a better foundation and a general idea of how to just be better in our industry.
Yeah. Yeah. And in this idea that we're kind of coming into literally that book right in front of you, you know, Dr. Peter Attia in Outlive, he talks about medicine 2.0 being where we are, medicine 3.0 being where he wants us to go. And just this concept of you can no longer be a passive passenger in your health journey. And you can no longer, like, you have skin in the game. Mm-hmm. And so you need to be willing to learn. And so this is like an exposure to, you don't have to understand all of the concepts. You can show up and be kind of overwhelmed by all of it. But being curious is a beautiful place to be. And can you take away a little bit and then maybe take away a little bit more after that and allow yourself to gradually learn? I love that before we started, you said, if you need to step out because this is too much or whatever, like you're a grown adult, step out. You know, those things just, they are empowering because it can be intimidating. So
it can be. And you know, anybody that does take education in the future, the one thing I always tell people to walk away with is that just whatever, no matter how long it is, make sure you walk out with an understanding of at least one thing you can practically apply, no matter what. Even if it's a 16-hour course, walk away with one thing that you apply, because I've seen more coaches fail at this, where they take all these courses and all these certs and they learn so much stuff, but then the application isn't there. And it's like, what was the point of you learning this if you're not going to actively apply it in some way, shape, or form? So regardless of how much information it is, like, just know that, hey, that weekend you're done or whenever that session's done, see how you can implement this knowledge or this coaching strategy and see how you can make it your own, right? Mm-hmm. And then you do that piece by piece, you know, with all the workshops and all the education you do, you'll be surprised the trainer or coach you become in the process, because the growth of a coach is so dope to see. Mm-hmm. I love seeing coaches blossom. Mm-hmm. And I've worked with coaches that were brand new. Mm-hmm. I've worked with coaches that were, I've had to mentor coaches that were older than me, but I've always loved brand new coaches who are just curious minds, motivated to learn, just see how they kind of just blossom over a period of time into like, yo, you are that person, like fist bump, fam. Like, yeah, you did it. Like you are the person who you were trying to become, and your journey is going to get, you know, just become so much better along this way if you keep on going this path.
And you've been a leader in this space for long enough now that I just kind of want to flip it back on you and say, like, that's you.
Okay. You did flip that back on me. That's interesting.
Yeah, because by now it's like, well, you're expected to be somebody who shows up and knows a thing or two. And how cool is that, right? But remember, you once upon a time were the guy that was just trying to get clients and getting a few and then losing a bunch and then being like, how am I going to do this? And I'm over here working, you know? So like, you were the guy not even that long ago, ultimately, grand scheme of life, that didn't, you know, that was scared and didn't know much. And now you're teaching the PPSC. Like, that's a beautiful trajectory. That's really exciting.
That's gnarly. No, I'm actually like, it's like a, actually had to take a second to think about it. Like, oh yeah, you're right. Like I never actually look back on my journey that often. And you saying that actually like mind boggles me, because I remember the first version of myself.
Yeah.
Right. I remember that person that was just like hungry, wide eyed and motivated and, you know, a little frustrated. But then, you know, almost 11 years later, it's like, dude, this is pretty sick. Right.
It's a big deal.
Right.
Yeah.
Holy crap.
Yeah. Just give yourself some kudos and then like keep working hard and right. Just know that the idea that you've arrived at this point, which is really, really cool at age 33, like, yo, where are you going to be at 40? Where are you going to be at 45? Where are you going to be at 50? Like,
I already have that plan.
Crazy shit.
I know that plan. I have that all figured out. I've been writing it down. Like, I have a plan.
Open, I'm going to remember, right. Be open.
Right.
Have a plan, but be open.
Oh my gosh. You're right. But hey, it's weird because like everything you're saying is right. I set a plan early on and I was open to also opportunities, and like what I'm doing now, I would have never guessed it that, you know, for my full-time job, I'm running a tech company. Now I would never even imagine, like, not even on the thought, like the spectrum of thought I would have had, right? Yeah. So you never know what life takes you. You gotta be open-minded and goal-oriented.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay. All right. We're gonna round this thing out the way that we always do, which is I need you to tell me three things that you're grateful for today.
First and foremost, I feel like, or I know I'm always grateful for another day to wake up. We take that for advantage. You know, we take that for granted. And it's though it sounds little, it's like, fam, you really don't know how much time you have left. Mm-hmm. You don't. You really don't. Regardless if you're healthy, you know, freak accident, weather, like you really don't know. So I'm always very grateful to have another day, to have another, you know, opportunity. Even if I struggled the day before, like, you know, I pray about it and then, you know, I go, I'm like, all right, like, let's do it, right? And if you're grateful for that, I feel like the more gratitude you have on the smallest things, you see so much, you're so much grateful for other big things that happen. Mm-hmm. So that would be the first one. I will admit that I'm grateful for my wife, because right now with my startup that I'm doing, like running a tent company, it's my second startup I've been a part of. And second one I've got to lead, first one I founded. And she's definitely had my back through this process and just kind of working through it, because it's hard. And someone that went from personal trainer to now, you know, basically trying to build technology from scratch and trying to build a double-sided marketplace. Like, it's hard, right? But she definitely, like, pushes me. She's like, you got this. I'm like, all right, hell yeah. And that's always so helpful. And then,
yeah, I love that.
You know, lastly, if we're talking about my third thing I'm grateful for, the adversity I've had to overcome, because it does make you a pretty strong individual. I think what ends up happening is that life does test you based on what you want. Right. And the bigger things you want, you will have to go through more adversity. The question is, like, I think life or God, whatever you believe in, is adversity going to make you stop? Right. And that's where I think a lot of people don't keep going. Right. So anybody that is on a hard path and you do face adversity, the greater the adversity, the greater the reward. You can't turn around. Don't turn around. Keep going. Like, if you feel like you're out in the wilderness right now in life and you feel like, you know, things are getting hard, it's good. It's forging you into something gnarly, right? The person you need to become to take on the responsibility you're asking for. And that's where, you know, just be grateful for the adversity. If it, you know, it only breaks you if you let it, yeah. Right? So if you can, you know, overcome any challenges and just continue to work and push forward, whether you're trying to build your first time building a personal training business, whether you're trying to jump in the online world, whether you're trying to start a tech company, right? Just battle through the adversity, because that's life really testing you, see how bad you want what you're asking for.
I love that. I love that so much. And this, for some reason, makes me think of something that's happened within the past 48 hours in my life. That what was so cool is I've now been taught skills of if something weird happens, then I get the opportunity to pause and check in with a mentor. That'll be one of my gratitudes. I'm grateful for that practice and that I have people I can call. And what was really cool was that, at least in this situation, I knew that this was something that I shouldn't just react to. And then was able to get a sounding board, and that mentor was able to say to me, this is great practice. This won't be the last time you deal with something like this. It's really good practice. So why don't you behave really well here and use this as a rep, because you're going to need it later. You don't engage in this sort of, you know, and it was just so cool. I'm so grateful for mentorship, and you can get that so many different places today, you know?
Right.
So that'll be one of my gratitudes. That wasn't my plan, but here we are. Let's see here. The second thing that I'm grateful for is honestly, just as I'm sitting here, you don't know this because you're new here, but I have a bunch of new plants. I've got a bunch of ones I've had for a while. And I've got some new ones and they just really give me life. So if you don't own plant babies, get some plant babies and love on them, pet them, tell them that you love them, call them by name. Just saying, I love my plants. Okay. The third thing that I'm grateful for, he's like, she's weird. I already thought she was weird. Now I really know she's weird. The third thing that I am grateful for today is going to be the opportunity to coach. Given the context of this, I do like, I write gratitudes every morning. Right now I'm up to 5. I started the practice where I wrote 3, right? Nice. And now I write 5, and that's just where I'm at with that. And I love it. And so one of my gratitudes this morning was every client of mine by name. And that's so cool to be in a position today where I can like have a practice in place to pause and think about it. And then I'm like, each one of you by name, you are who I am grateful for. You add so much value to my life. So those are my gratitudes for today. I do want to ask, where can they find you, support you?
So you can always find me on Instagram, Roman_Empire813. I'm not that active on social media, but I am always open to sharing any information and mentoring people. Some people always say you should always charge for, you know, what skills you're good at. And I do understand that, but I truly believe in giving back to the community. I used to be a nonprofit. I used to run a nonprofit and I love giving back to the community. So I feel like since I can't run a state ran nonprofit now, my nonprofit is actually just sharing and helping people. So I've openly mentored people, wherever it is, whether it's been the tech field, whether it's been the fitness space, I feel the need to help people. So if anybody needs any help, any guidance, any just a soundboard for constructive criticism that you need to be open to, you know, I'm more than happy to do that. And, if some of you guys are on LinkedIn, obviously I'm on LinkedIn. But yeah, no, I'm always around. I may be slow to respond, but I will always give you the best effort I can when I can respond.
Yeah, yeah. And keep an eye out for the coaching market. If you're in the coaching industry, that is what you're actively working on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me give a quick plug if you don't mind. So like Claire keeps on mentioning, I've mentioned before, I'm in the tech space now, and this is all an evolution of my professional career. Again, this is where if you're open to new opportunities, you never know what could happen. So my goal with the coaching market, TCM, we're a B2B marketplace, and my goal is to modernize and democratize continuing education for the fitness, health, wellness, and coaching space. Mm-hmm. And more specifically, if anybody knows what Udemy or Coursera is, I'm building that for our community because I see the writing on the wall that the education space is blowing up, and it's highly overlooked, but you know, with over 2 million professionals and over 115,000 gyms, clubs, facilities across our country, there is billions of dollars spent every single year on some sort of continuing education or professional development. My goal is to create a modern tech-driven platform to become the central hub. Like if you're a course creator and you have great content and you're willing to go through a curation process, I'll be happy to promote you because there are so many dope people out there that sell courses and have knowledge, but there's selling on a personal website. It's just tough, right? Totally. So I want to be able to bring that community together, right? What's completely fragmented community of professionals, I feel like we need to be together, right? If there's Twitch for gamers, Etsy for creatives, like why isn't there something that actually brings us together? Because speaking, we're so powerful. Go ahead.
I interrupted. I want you to finish that. Yeah. Okay. There are Twitch streamers that just opened a gym here, by the way.
Really?
Yes. So you said Twitch for gamers, and I'm like, no, they like do the gym stuff now. So it's so crazy. You go in there. It's called Iron Forge, right? My boyfriend actually trains clients right there right now. That's one of a couple locations he works with clients at. And it's been the funniest thing because I'm not used to it. It's new to me. And so you go in and you're like just dodging streams. It's like, whoa, there's another one. Whoa, there's another one. And there's like millions of people on these things. It's the craziest thing.
Right.
Man, the world... I also just kind of love that because like I remember whenever I first started to film myself in the gym and being made fun of for it. And now I'm like, people are just streaming left and right. I'm like, you get it. You go off. You do your thing.
The game is changing. Anybody that hears this message, the world, our fitness world is changing. Either you adapt and continue to move with it or you stay in the past. Do not stay in the past. I'm not saying you have to go hard on being on social media and recording everything, but the world around us is changing. And if you're not actively adjusting to it, you're not going to be able to keep up with it when it starts to go full speed. Like, you know, what years ago people thought was making fun of for people recording themselves now is commonplace, right? Very. Like, it's a common thing. This is the world of, like, the internet is now unlocking so many more opportunities for millions, if not billions of people and people that are creators, people that want to promote themselves and sell stuff and, you know, get out there, like, find it, right? Do what you can.
And if you think you have something of value to share, don't do the world a disservice.
Right? Share like it. You never know. You never know who you could help, right? Like whatever you have to share, you know, if you want to sell courses, if you want to sell programs, if you want to do a podcast, if you want to write ebooks, do it. Mm-hmm. Iterate. Like your don't be so scared not to do it. Mm-hmm. Just do it. Like I literally started a tech company with no background. I just did it. And so far, it seems to be working.
Yeah, yeah. So, look at what you did so far. I mean, look at how you went from, I've never even done this before. And now, I mean, the whole trajectory.
I went from
Given yourself proof that you can get stuff done.
So I'll even tell you how the story of this actually started, because this is always funny how I started my tech company. This was not my first entrepreneurial shot, right? When I was working for Equinox, I wanted to start to break out because I was getting very, very good at education. I just went Educator of the Year. PPSC was paying me big money to travel for them and teach for them. I went all over the country. I wanted to spread out and become a mercenary educator. So this is no shame on this guy, but I took a cert, DBC from David Alexander, and he's such a – I mean, I love the cert. It was a good cert, great cert. And I remember I emailed David Alexander like a few days before. I'm like, hey, I'm coming down to Miami from D.C. I'd love to talk to you so I can be a part of your company. I can help you guys, right? So I go to this sir. I meet him for the first time. I'm like, oh, what's up? Shake his hand. I'm like, thank you, man. Hey, I want to be a part of this with you. And he's like, all right, we'll chop it up tomorrow. Okay, cool. Man, no. The next day.
Oh, no.
Dude wasn't there. And I remember I was so hurt. Oh. Like, pissed.
Fuel.
Fuel. So that day, I flew home. I was like, you know what? You may have just completely dissed me and ghosted me. I'm going to build something so dope that you can't not see me one day. And then by myself, you know, I was like, I should make an educational company. You know, why not? Then I met another founder, one of my friends in my friend network. And then a few months later, I met my other co-founder, Rachel, who she's just dope. And then, you know, more time went by and like life started to give me the things I needed. Like I've been able to have a team of upwards of 12 people, mostly developers, where, you know, by the grace of God, I've been able to build a tech company for almost nothing, mm-hmm. right? Like, mm-hmm. and that was all from one leap of faith, right? Mm-hmm. Just like, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm going to do it. And I did it. And, you know, years later, after I went from a side hustle to just trying to explore, you know, just trying to figure things out, I'm like, yo, like, I'm actually I'm 33 years old and I can say I'm a CEO because I have done what other people can't even imagine doing, right? Building a tech company and learning technology, I'm not a tech guy. Mm-hmm. I was a guy that barely graduated college, mm-hmm. and I started a tech company. I've had people on my team that went to Princeton, right? I've had people that have worked for me that are eons smarter than I am, mm-hmm. but I built the company and I recruited them, right? And that just shows like if you have a purpose, you can solve a problem, you want to help people, yo, put that energy out there. People can feel it and it will come to you. You just got to be patient and kind of walk your path.
Yeah. I love that. I'm excited to. I'm grateful that you moved to Austin. I swear this is just such a hub of such dope humans. So thank you for choosing to be here on podcast.
Oh, for course.
One, I appreciate your time because it is very valuable. And you choosing to come share here, I just appreciate it selfishly 100. And for my people.
Yeah, no, thank you for inviting me. Like I love meeting more coaches, right? Because our community is filled with such amazing people. And I love the fact that more people like you are trying to get out there and share what you got to share, because like, how many people are going to know about you if you don't start to talk and like share your personality traits? Like this is where I think the new age of the fitness industry is changing. I think it's going to definitely change for the better. It's going to be sick.
Yeah. And I think the how many people are going to know you. I've had such a weird, just like vulnerable moment, I guess, of like, you know, it's been weird. Like, I don't really know that I struggle with is that actually something? I don't know. That feels weird, you know, but there's so much good that I want to share that it's kind of like, okay, I guess we're going to do that. I don't know. It's just an interesting thing to think about. Cause I'm like, okay, we have to expose people to love. Right?
Right.
And we're currently exposing them to love through the ability to love themselves and being able to move well and whatever. Right. But like exposure to love has to be the thing and whatever it takes to get there. Mm-hmm. And like, oh, there are some repercussions to that. Okay, fine. Anyway,
I think if it helps, like you said, it feels weird. I think the way I've always told people is that just because it's different doesn't mean it's bad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It might be, you know, you might be growing, right? Like that's the growth process. Isn't it? Like growing, if you ever had a growth spurt, growing pains hurt.
Yeah.
Right. But when you try new things, there are growing pains, but totally. You do it and you'd be surprised when you become a butterfly, you know?
Yeah. It's beautiful. It's so beautiful. I even think about this, you know, where I think this will be episode like 63 and it's just like, this thing has grown into such a beautiful experience. Man, I'm so grateful that people were like, you should really go do that. I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's been so freaking cool. Selfishly, like, the conversations I've gotten to capture here, I'll never regret that. That's so cool.
The human experience. Cool. So lovely.
I like being here. All right. I appreciate you. If you are still here listening, one, we just want to tell you that we also understand that your time is valuable. And so we appreciate you choosing to come and spend it with us in this way. And if you are interested in actually working with me, I work with clients in person here in Austin, Texas. And so you can find me on socials for that. I'll have that in the description. I will have his links in the description as well. And then if you want to work with me one-to-one or group online, there are offerings for both of those. So you can go to my website. That will be in the description as well if you want to check that out. And we just hope that you choose to have a beautiful day.